Okay, this coming Shabbos we're going to have the honor and privilege of being able to read Parshas Vayera. And of course, Vayera begins with a resounding request of Moshe Rabbeinu by Hashem to go ahead and speak to Bnei Yisrael and tell them, L'chein amor l'bnei Yisrael ani Hashem, tell them that I'm Hashem. V'otzeisi, v'itzalti, v'go'alti, v'lakachti. That uses the five languages of Geula, the four of Mitzrayim, and then of course the ever popular fifth one of Avesi Eschem El Haaretz. And Rashi and the Rashbam in Pesachim on Daf Tzadi Tes Amud Beis note that the four cups at Pesach, the four cups that we use at the Seder, all represent the four languages of Geula. Each one of the Kosos reflect in the V'hotzeisi V'yitzalti V'go'alti V'go'lakachti. It's an interesting halacha here. While one can drink, if necessary, between the first and second cups, and between the second and third cups, one's not supposed to drink anything between cups three and four. In other words, you can drink if you have to between Kadesh and Magid. And of course, many of us have a custom of drinking other things during the Shulchan Orech, which is between cups two and three. But once we bench, and then we go to the challah, we don't do any sort of drinking between cups three and four. And Hagona Rav Asher Weinshalita suggested an interesting remez is contained herein. It says, Rav Asher, many people see a difference between the redemption of the body and the redemption of the soul. And by telling us not to break the fourth language apart from the first three, that is to say, not between Votzesi, Vitzalti, Vigalti, and of course the fourth pasuk, the fourth language of Geula, Vilakachti, which represents the redemption of the soul, what we're doing, says Rav Asher, is highlighting the necessity of not separating between Geulas HaNefesh and Geulas HaGuf. What a fascinating idea that sometimes we lose things. Once we're out of our physical danger, we sometimes forget that we're still not free yet. We have to get to the point of experiencing freedom, even of the soul. After we get this instruction, and Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen wind up getting their yichus, the Torah tells us, "Vayikach Amram as Yocheved Dodaso Lo Leisha." Amram took Yocheved his hand, and Amram is identified as one of the four people who died without sin. That's what the Gemara says in Shabbos. So how could he marry his aunt? How can a marriage that brought out Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron HaKohen, and Miriam Hanaviyah result from a shidduch that would be unacceptable in a few simple months with the giving of the Torah? So Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, answers that Amram and Yocheved knew that great people would come out from the two of them in their union. And thus they knew that they should not keep the Torah on this particular point before it was given. And that's consistent with the words of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who explains that the Avos and others who kept the Torah before Matan Torah did so as Einam Mitzuvim Ve'osim, those who are not commanded and still go ahead and follow through, who acted on the basis of their own Seichel, based on the merits of following that which they were not commanded to do. Now when this happens, it is okay for them to do that which is best for Klal Yisrael, even if it's against the actual mitzvah. But post-Matan Torah, we don't have that right to turn around and say, we'll do what we want. That's the difference between a mitzvah v'yosa and an eino mitzvah v'yosa. A person doesn't have a right to say, I absent myself from responsibilities for the greater good once the Torah has been given, because we have a mitzvah, that there is no obligation hereafter. And so after the yichus, the Torah goes back and repeats so much of the command and the continuation of the story about HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, and Moshe had the osos to do, and Moshe refused, etc., etc. It's almost reminiscent of a pasuk that appears in last week's parsha where God tells Moshe, Moshe speaks to Paro, and he says, "Bini Bechori Yisrael, my son, my Bechor, Am Yisrael." Where the Kuzari notes that we're very different than the rest of the world. And Mori V'Rabbi Roshachta would often point out to us that that's the uniqueness of being the Amhav Nevchar, of being the chosen people. What does that mean? So Roshachta would add that when we are Chaviv, when we say at the end of Pirkei Avos Chaviv in Yisrael, that means that we represent the sense of godliness to the world. And Roshachta would often remind us that that's not only an opportunity, it's also a responsibility. A responsibility of the Bechor in general. That the Bechor is the one who's supposed to represent and present the parental ideal to the other members of the family. He is the one who's supposed to represent the parents. And so too, when it comes to Klal Yisrael, we're supposed to be good, the representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the rest of the world. That's what we call being an Or LaGoyim. Rosh Hashanah would often remind us, sometimes we don't do that job very well, and it hurts our standing as Am HaNivchar in the eyes of the world. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. What it means is that we have a greater responsibility to figure it out and to make it work. So thereafter, Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu get into an argument, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, look, you have your Aaron. Right? You're going to say everything that I command you to say, right? You're going to do that which I tell you to do. Right? And Aaron, your brother, will speak to Paro. And he will, together we will release Bnei Yisrael, and Paro will kick us out of the land. Now Rashi explains that what this pasuk means is that each time Hashem gave Moshe a message to transmit to Paro, Moshe would relate it once, and then Aaron would repeat it in a way that Paro would be able to understand. The Ramban, on the other hand, learns that Moshe would not say it in front of Paro at all. He would tell Aaron, Aaron would transmit the message to Paro. Now, according to Rashi, what's the purpose in Moshe Rabbeinu saying each nevuah one time if Paro was only going to have to understand it from Aaron? What's the value of having Moshe stand there and speak in a language that Paro would not be able to understand? So Moshe Tversky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Hashem Yimkon Damav, opined that Hashem needed to be involved in the entirety of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that includes the warnings. So if only Aaron would have sounded the warnings of each and every Makkah, that would be a mechanism of shlichus, of agency. But that's not the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised, V'avarti Beretz Mitzrayim Ani V'lo Malach. I'm going to do it all. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the one who served as the mouthpiece of the Shekhinah, he's the one who had to say each warning to Paro at least once. That way it's a full manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself taking Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Atot Tedaber, you speak it so that you do it on my behalf. So then Paro goes ahead, and Paro is told that there are going to be Makos. And when those Makos begin, at least the first three, Moshe is told, Emor el Aaron, kach es matcha, take your staff, tell Aaron to take your staff. And the first three Makos, which involved hitting, those are three Makos that were done by Aaron as opposed to Moshe, because both the land and the water, it saved Moshe Rabbeinu in his life, and Moshe felt indebted to them. However, that's like the craziest thing in the world, because water and land are both inanimate. So what's the difference whether a person hits them or not? I mean, we walk on land, we walk on water, we walk swim in water, whatever the case may be. And we don't feel bad about that process. So Rav Volbi explains that the issue of refraining was not for the water or the land, but rather for Moshe. Moshe knew that a refined person shows dignity to anything he comes in contact with, or that he benefits from. And so if one trains himself in regard to even that which is inanimate, certainly he or she will do the same for things that are animate as well. And therefore, he was told to tell Aaron to do the job. Now when it comes to the Makkah of Tzfardeya, at the end of the Makkah, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Paro, when do you want me to get rid of this Makkah? And then Paro answers, L'macharta, I want you to do it tomorrow. Now why doesn't the Paro want the Makkah out today? Why wait to tomorrow and continue to suffer for 24 hours? So Rashi explains that Paro wanted Moshe to daven now that the frogs would disappear tomorrow, because this would demonstrate the power was distinct from that of the Egyptian magicians who could do things immediately. And to make this point, Paro was willing to suffer. So Rav Simcha Zissel Brady, Zechen Tzadok Lebracha, the famous Chevron of Rosh Yeshiva, notes that this is the power of Paro's scientific curiosity. It led him to wait it out. And once he has the freedom of mind, then he hardens his heart. But not because of his doubt about Moshe Rabbeinu. It was his stubbornness at that point that makes him hold back. And that's what the Torah says, Vayitzak Moshe Hashem al Devar Tzvardim, that Moshe and Aaron went out, and Moshe called out to Hashem about the frogs. And why is it only by the frogs that we find Moshe Rabbeinu using Tzaka, Vayitzak el Hashem, in order to get rid of a Makkah? So here, the late great Rosh Hashiva of Ofakim, Rav Chaim Kamil Zatzal, noted that frogs were famous for their Mesiris Nefesh, and that they served as the source of the message of Mesiris Nefesh that would exist in the future at the time of Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. So suggests the Gemara Pesachim on Daf Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis. And so that being the case, Moshe knew that ordinary prayer would not be able to remove the frogs. In order to overpower frogs, the style would have to be stronger. His prayers would have to outdo their croaks. And so hence, he uses tzaka in order to get past the tzvardeya. Finally, this, while on the subject of animals and amphibians, in the Haftorah we talk about the taninim hagedolim, the great taninim that crouches within the rivers. Ha'omer liya ori vani asisini, the river is mine, I made it myself. And so Rav Rivlin Shalita, the great late former Mashgiach of Karim Biyavi, is very much with us, but he's no longer the Mashgiach in the yeshiva, having retired. Rav Rivlin pointed out that in contrast to Paro, who would give credit to the great serpents in the water, the Jewish view of Leviathan, which is identified in the Gemara as those Taninim Hagedolim, is as a vehicle for Kavod Shamayim. In contrast to Paro, who declares, Li Ori Vani Asisini, the river is mine, I made it myself, a Jew says, Da'as Hashem, you should know Hashem, Hashem created us. Hu Asahu no Velo Anachnu Amo. He created us, we are His. And the written form, and the formal form, that is to say, when we say Mizmor Lasoda, we say, lo, it's written as, velo anachnu, and not we, lo with an aleph. But the way we speak it out is, velo anachnu, we are His. The two readings of the Pasuk complement each other. When we know that it's lo anachnu, that we didn't create it, but then we understand it's lo anachnu, we are His. And then we'll be able to say, Kitova Shemli Yolam Chasdo Vador Vador Munasa. What Rav Rivlin is trying to teach us over here is that when we have an opportunity in life to experience even great things, we need to understand those opportunities come from the Ribbono Shel Olam and not from our own hands, which helps us contrast ourselves from Paro, who made it his life's mission to make sure that everyone understood that it's lo anachnu, that everything goes back to ourselves, that we think it's all about ourselves. B'nai Yisrael don't do that. B'nai Yisrael take a higher standard in the process. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us the opportunity for us to understand our higher standard, and may HaKadosh Baruch Hu make sure that we merit in the process to great things, to the Yom Shekulo, Shabbos, Umnucha, L'chayei Ha'olamim, Shabbat Shalom to all.